So I'd like to introduce Jack Hubbell, CSB, who's here today to speak to us on the topic of It Shall Be the Duty. Jack?
Thank you so much, Jim, and good afternoon. It certainly is a privilege and pleasure for me to be here this afternoon and to be a part of this annual meeting. And I'm sure we all enjoyed Desiree's beautiful, beautiful song. It was worth the trip, wasn't it? I'm also sure that most of you are familiar with a letter Mary Baker Eddy wrote on July 27, 1909, in which she showed her desire for the Mother Church to, quote, establish and maintain a Christian Science resort for the so-called sick, end of quote. A couple of weeks later, she wrote the Christian Science Board of Directors that she was willing to let the matter rest for the present. And although delayed, the board proceeded to meet this goal, and in 1916 established the Christian Science Benevolent Association. Mrs. Eddy recognized the need for such a facility as this, Ardenwood, to serve Christian scientists. And although I never thought of Ardenwood as a resort, why not? Can you think of any activity that could be more enjoyable, more recreational, more satisfying than experiencing the healing presence of the Christ? Can you think of anything more rewarding than healing work? Incidentally, how many of you here this afternoon are Christian Science practitioners? Well, actually, each and every Christian Scientist is a practitioner. We may not all be listed in the Christian Science Journal, but every Christian Scientist is a practitioner engaged in the healing ministry. And we all want to be better practitioners. We all want to do better healing work. Well, how do we do it? Mrs. Eddy once told the students of her household, "The workers in the field are not healing because they are not meeting animal magnetism, which says they cannot heal. If you stay here until you learn to handle animal magnetism, I'll make a healer out of you." Well, then if we wish to be better healers, we too must learn to handle animal magnetism. So let's consider this topic this afternoon. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, "Oh, no, who wants to hear about animal magnetism? Heavy." Now, I realize it's always more enjoyable to consider the loveliness of love, the beauty of holiness, than it is to discuss animal magnetism and evil. Indeed, even Mrs. Eddy was at first disinclined to handle it. But that's the nature of the subject, to hide itself. So we, too, must yield our reluctance to expose animal magnetism. According to her secretary, Adam Dickey, Mrs. Eddy once wrote, "Teach your students what animal magnetism is, how it works in themselves and from outside sources on them. These are the points in which my students fail most in teaching and are the most difficult to teach rightly, so as not to frighten but strengthen the students. Obviously, we don't fear something we know if we know it doesn't exist. So fear of animal magnetism stems from ignorance. But there's a difference in ignorance and ignorance. To ignore animal magnetism does not handle the claim that it does exist. We must include in our study not only the absolute truth of being, but also the unmasking and destroying of the lies about true being. It requires great balance when considering the subject of animal magnetism. We tend to make too little or too much of it. So let's approach our topic with poise. Actually, it's a pleasure to handle animal magnetism. So let's have some fun today. Mrs. Eddy's critics asserted that neither animal magnetism nor mental malpractice had existence, and therefore did not need to be addressed. Mrs. Eddy spoke of such individuals as sticklers for a false, convenient peace. So why is it so important to handle animal magnetism? Because every problem in the world is one of animal magnetism. No, every problem is not intentionally directed malicious animal magnetism, but every problem is a false concept acting mesmerically in human consciousness. So long as there appears to be evil present or problems that confront our lives, so long as there seems to be an inability to demonstrate the healing efficacy of Christian Science, we need to handle animal magnetism. The handling of animal magnetism is basic in the practice of Christian Science. Well, just what is animal magnetism? Well, actually, it's awkward to try and define something that doesn't exist. It can only be defined in terms of the absence of that which does exist. It's like trying to define darkness. Darkness isn't the presence of something. It's an absence of something. Animal magnetism is the suppositional absence of the Christ. As the Christ is the absolute true idea that comes to human consciousness to destroy error, so would animal magnetism be the suppositional opposite, the false concept presented to our human consciousness to destroy truth. Mrs. Eddy speaks of animal magnetism as the antipode of divine science. Whatever divine science would do, then animal magnetism would claim to do the opposite. Animal magnetism, by its very nature, would counteract and make ineffective our healing work. But animal magnetism is not something powerful, black, and spooky. It's not a thing, a person, or entity. It has no source nor cause. Nor is it a source or cause. Animal magnetism is only a term. So let's briefly review three basic terms. I know you're all familiar with this, but let's just review it for a moment. The terms error, animal magnetism, and aggressive mental suggestion. Error. Error is a term. A term we use to indicate a suppositional opposite or absence of truth or reality. Now, obviously, it must be only a term, because there couldn't be any such thing as real unreality or erroneous truth. Animal magnetism. Animal magnetism is also a term. A term that is used to imply that not only does error exists, but it has the power to do something. It is error's claim to act. Mrs. Eddy tells us, animal magnetism is the voluntary or involuntary action of error in all its forms. It's the human antipode of divine science. Well, how does animal magnetism act? This leads us to our third term, aggressive mental suggestion. Aggressive mental suggestion is a term indicating the means through which animal magnetism acts. The only way animal magnetism can touch you is for you to accept an aggressive mental suggestion into your consciousness. Mrs. Eddy considered alertness to animal magnetism's false suggestions so vital in the practice of Christian Science that she placed a bylaw in the manual. It shall be the duty of every member of this church to defend himself mental suggestion. Perhaps some of you read the article in the New York Times magazine a few months ago entitled The Spin Doctors. The article discusses the placebo and nocebo. Now, most of us know about placebos. Placebo is a false drug, such as a sugar pill, that doesn't contain any medicinal ingredient. Yet, people taking it believe that they're better. A nocebo is the opposite of the placebo. It's the presentation of a mental catalyst that would make people worse. For instance, Mrs. Eddy tells us, a man was made to believe that he occupied a bed where a cholera patient had died. Immediately, the symptoms of this disease appeared, and the man died. The fact was that he had not caught the cholera by material contact because no cholera patient had been in that bed. Now note that the man had not just been frightened to death. He came down with the actual symptoms of cholera. Well, where did the symptoms come from? Robert Hahn, an epidemiologist at the Center for Disease Control, wrote a paper given at a nocebo conference. And I want to quote, "Beliefs can make us sick as well as healthy. The nocebo phenomenon is a little recognized facet of culture that may be responsible for a substantial variety of pathology throughout the world." End of quote. What the MDs are calling a nocebo effect is actually the result of accepting an aggressive mental suggestion. It is vital to defend ourselves against aggressive mental suggestions. Why? Because presenting a false suggestion is the basic modus operandi of hypnotism. In his book, Principles of Psychology, William James makes it clear that hypnosis operates through suggestion. And the trance is, in fact, an extreme state of suggestion. Mr. James further states, and I quote, "Suggestions come to us every moment of our lives. And to the extent that we accept them uncritically, unconsciously, passively, or without logical grounds, we are being mesmerized or hypnotized in our waking state. Suggestions may be audible or inaudible, personal or impersonal, random or purposeful, and have immediate or delayed effects." End of quote. Well, no wonder Mrs. Eddy was so emphatic about the importance of dealing with animal magnetism's false suggestions. Now, it's generally accepted that a hypnotist cannot make a subject perform acts repugnant to his or her nature. But experienced hypnotists claim that they can hypnotize an individual to perform acts not consistent with their nature, and even without the subject's consent. Now, most of us scoff at hypnotism as some theatrical exhibition. For most of us, our only known contact with hypnotism has been as a form of entertainment, a little bit of showbiz. But I counted 28 hypnotists listed in the Yellow Pages for Palo Alto. In his memoirs of Mary Baker Eddy, Adam Dickey tells us, "Mrs. Eddy called members of her household together. And speaking of the hypnotist, she said, he boasts that he can make a law for you 6 months ahead. Mr. James confirms Mrs. Eddy's remark. He states that deferred suggestions may take effect months or even years later. Hypnotists claim that they can suggest something now that the subject will find himself experiencing as a physical condition years after being hypnotized. Well, then why couldn't people be hypnotized now to believe that years later, when they reach a certain age, their hair will turn gray, or they will have faulty memory or failing eyesight? Or when giving birth to a baby, there will be pain. Have we been hypnotized into believing that when we sit in a cold draft today, we'll get influenza tomorrow? Always remember, every problem is a hypnotic state of thought that appears as imperfect matter. If we believe the false suggestions of animal magnetism, we will see, hear, or feel them. If we do not accept the suggestions, they will not appear as real to us. So we see why handling animal magnetism has much to do with healing in Christian Science. Well, what is it that needs healing? The strategy of animal magnetism is to mesmerize us into seeing the problem as person, disease, abnormality. But this is a decoy and leaves animal magnetism untouched. This is the serpent, alias animal magnetism, hiding itself. Rather, we need to deal with the real problem, animal magnetism. And that's why we never, never, never treat man. If you find yourself treating man, then stop, because you're not working correctly. We're not dealing with a sick man. We deal with the false suggestion that man is sick. Big difference. Before I start to give a treatment, I've learned to ask myself, am I accepting the false suggestion that the condition is real? Or am I recognizing the problem as a hypnotic state of thought, objectified? Now, although the patient may appear to be mesmerized into believing in the reality of the problem, isn't it clear that animal magnetism would also mesmerize us into seeing a sick person that needs healing? For instance, let's go back for a moment to the man that manifested all the symptoms of cholera after being told that he was in a bed of a man that had died of cholera. Let's suppose that you were called as a Christian Scientist to deal with this case. You were told the symptoms were those of cholera, and the man appears to be dying. What would you treat? Would you treat the man? Would you treat the disease? Would you deal with contagion? Would you look up citations on cholera? Would you turn down the case because you feel cholera is too serious for you to handle with your limited understanding of Christian Science? You would not do any of these things if you knew that the man had only been presented with a false suggestion. If you really knew the truth, you wouldn't deal with cholera. You would deal with the false suggestion. Why? Because the false suggestion would be all there was to the problem. Oh, but what happens if you begin to experience the symptoms of flu? Now what are you going to do? Well, if you're not careful, you may be tempted to deal with the flu as though it were a real problem. But wouldn't it be more specific to deal with a false suggestion, knowing that a false suggestion is all there is to the problem? Well, how do we eliminate a false suggestion? By knowing the truth. Now, what does it mean to know the truth? When confronted with a problem, we sometimes hear a Christian Scientist say, I must know the truth about it. Now, there's nothing incorrect about this, but unfortunately, knowing the truth has become Christian Science jargon, meaning something we need to do to change or eliminate an imperfect condition. But knowing the truth means exactly what it says. Knowing the truth means knowing or being conscious of that which is already true. We may find ourselves thinking, I am sick. Now, what can I do to get well? I know. I'll affirm I am well. And that will stop me from being sick. But knowing the truth is not a tool we use to go from imperfection back to perfection. It's not a process. We don't affirm I am well as a means to stop being sick. We affirm I am well because I am well, and therefore can't be sick. If you begin your treatment, thinking, I'm giving this treatment to improve an imperfect condition, then stop. Because you're working from a mesmerized point of view. Therefore, I find it helpful to recognize that the patient is well before I give the treatment. The treatment doesn't make the patient well. The fact is that the patient is already well. The treatment is the recognition of this fact. A consciousness that knows that which is will never accept that which is not. A consciousness that knows that which is a consciousness imbued with the Christ. Being conscious of reality, being conscious of yourself as you really are, is knowing the truth that makes you free. So knowing the truth is not the means through which we arrive at healing. Knowing the truth is the healing. Healing is not recovery. Healing is discovery. The discovery of the perfection of being already present. Healing is the revealing of reality. Now, a little bit ago, we spoke about Mrs. Eddy's statement that we are not healing because we are not meeting animal magnetism, which says we cannot heal. This is another suggestion of animal magnetism that must be met. Remember, the suggestions always come in the guise of our own thought. And so we may find ourselves thinking, Christian Science doesn't heal. Well, now we quickly reject this suggestion based on the many proofs of healing. Then the suggestion comes, okay, Christian Science heals, but it can't heal me. Again, we reject this, knowing God's law is universal and always operative for everyone. Next, the suggestion comes, okay, Christian Science heals, and it can heal me, provided I have sufficient spiritual understanding. But I don't. I'm uninspired. Something's missing. I just feel flat. I'm just reading words. And what happens? We take this third suggestion in, hook, line, and sinker. And off we go, trying to find inspiration from someplace out there, instead of handling the aggressive mental suggestion that tells us we lack it. We may find ourselves thinking, well, I do have some spiritual understanding, maybe enough understanding to heal a cold. But I don't have enough spiritual understanding to heal something really serious. See what we've done? We're right back dealing with a condition. Remember, we're not healing a person, place, a serious or not so serious condition. On the contrary, we are dealing with a mesmeric state of thought, a mesmeric dream. Now I ask you, is it any more difficult to awaken a person dreaming he is being chased by an elephant than to awaken a person dreaming he is being chased by a mouse? No. The problem isn't an elephant. So why look up citations on elephants? Problem isn't an elephant. The problem is the dream itself. To awaken from the dream takes care of the mouse and the elephant. We must recognize that God never made a dream or a dreamer. Both the dream and the dreamer are one. And that one is a lie. So if you find yourself believing, I can't heal, you can agree with your adversary quickly and say, you're right, animal magnetism, I cannot heal. For it's not a matter of one person correcting another person, but rather it is the Christ, the absolute true idea correcting a lie about a person. And there is no lie that doesn't yield to the truth. This fact refutes the false suggestion that would tell us that it is our inadequate personal human mind that attempts to heal. Mrs. Eddy writes, hold perpetually this thought, that it is the spiritual idea, the Holy Ghost in Christ, which enables you to demonstrate with scientific certainty the rule of healing. When we see that it is the healing power of the Christ within us, then we can go forward with confidence and refute animal magnetism's suggestion that we cannot heal. When we understand what it is that needs to be healed and what it is that does the healing, then we will stop believing that we cannot heal. Another suggestion of animal magnetism is that of disunity. Today, the general world belief of disunity is found in places such as Bosnia, the Middle East, Northern Ireland, as well as disunity in other aspects of life, such as business, family, between departments in institutions or corporations, and within our church. We are being distracted and are playing into the hands of animal magnetism when we focus on person rather than on the error appearing as person. As surely as disease, accident, and malfunction appear to be real and cannot be ignored, neither can we ignore what appears as the Antichrist in any presentation. In short, we must reject the suggestion that animal magnetism can use you, me, or anyone else as its tool to produce error, to act under an assumed name, to curse, hypnotize, disrupt or destroy our health, wealth, joy, or the Christian Science Church, its officials, or you and me, its adherents. The world belief of disunity is clamoring for acceptance. And we Christian scientists need to be especially alert to reject animal magnetism's claims of disunity and affirm that Christian scientists are united. We are united in our great love and gratitude for God and His unspeakable love and care for each one of us. We are united in our love and gratitude for Christ Jesus, our way shore. We are united in our love and gratitude for our leader, Mary Baker Eddy, for what she did, what she was, and for what she is. Well, what did she do? She discovered Christian Science, gave us Science and Health, founded our dear Mother Church and the manual which forever governs it. Who was she? She was the revelator that brought the great revelation, divine science, the comforter which Jesus himself prophesied. And who is she? She is, and shall ever continue to be, our beloved and only leader. We are united in our refusal to idolize her or adulterate the purity of Christian Science as she taught it. We are all united in our love and gratitude for her. We are united in our deep gratitude for the healing efficacy of Christian Science. Unity is vital to the Christian Scientist. Disunity leads to disintegration. But since God is the one and only mind, there can be no disunity due to a conflict of minds, nor unity due to a meeting of the minds. But there is a unity based on one divine mind being reflected by each individual. Hence, no conflict of interest, no distrust of others, no conflict of opinions. Well, does unity have anything to do with healing? Oh, yes, a great deal. The whole healing practice of Christian Science can be stated in terms of restoration to oneness, a realization of the oneness yet distinctness of mind and idea, God and man. So we see that every problem is the failure to handle animal magnetism. And that's why it's important, before you start your treatment, to establish that every treatment must handle animal magnetism. In fact, to give a treatment is to handle animal magnetism. And to handle animal magnetism is to give a treatment. I cannot stress too strongly that handling animal magnetism is not something you do as a last resort when everything else has failed. It's not the last thing you do, it's the first thing you do. All right, well, now this afternoon we have been discussing our duty to defend ourselves against aggressive mental suggestion. Now, this is what we must do. Yes, but how do we do it? So let's consider for a few moments just how we defend ourselves against aggressive mental suggestion. In his memoirs, Adam Dickey quotes Mrs. Eddy as saying, "Where all students have failed is in not knowing how to handle animal magnetism." Well, we handle animal magnetism in proportion as we see it to be nothing but a term without law, power, substance, mind, or reality. How could that which is not do something to that which is? To see animal magnetism as nothing is not ignoring it, it's handling it. Now, about 10% of handling animal magnetism is specific affirmation and denial. Our textbook states, "The exterminator of error is the great truth that God good is the only mind." Why does one divine mind exterminate error? Because it exterminates the suggestion of a second mind to originate an aggressive mental suggestion. The one divine mind precludes the presence of another mind to hypnotize or to be hypnotized. If God doesn't think it, it isn't thought. Knowing this, we can affirm here and now the absolute truth of being. We reflect the divine mind as our mind, And therefore, we think as God causes us to think. Since we think as God causes us to think, we can't be hypnotized. And because we cannot be hypnotized, we are not hypnotized. We know who we are and how we are. We cannot be the victims of a curse or hypnotic suggestion. We cannot be confused or drowsy when we read the Bible, our textbook, or give a Christian Science treatment. We cannot be made to procrastinate or feel reluctant to give a Christian Science treatment. We cannot be discouraged or give our consent to surrender. Animal magnetism cannot gain objectivity as personal sense, appearing as pride, egotism, jealousy, vindictiveness, or deceit. It cannot make anyone a malpractitioner. Nothing can come to anyone or go from anyone but what God expresses. Therefore, we can't be mesmerized into turning away from Christ's truth to accept that Christian Science treatment is invalid, or to seek material means to correct a material body, place, or thing. Nor can we act in any way foreign to our sense of right to pursue pagan, materialistic, or secular means to strengthen our church. We can't be hypnotized into accepting that someone else can be hypnotized. Animal magnetism cannot assert itself and gain entrance into our consciousness or prevent the Christ in healing, delay its results, or cause a reversal. In short, we can neither influence nor be influenced erroneously. Why not? Because God is the one and only mind, and therefore our mind through reflection. Now, none of what we have been discussing has any value whatsoever unless we are alert to such suggestions as, I don't want to handle animal magnetism. I'm too tired and sleepy to handle animal magnetism. I don't know how to handle animal magnetism. If we fail to handle these suggestions, then all else we've learned is worthless. But of course, we do know how to handle animal magnetism. So let's make sure we do it. Don't address person, place, or thing. Address the error. You devilish suggestion, you're a liar and the father of a lie. There is no truth in you. You're nothing but a term. You have no power, no substance, no law, no mind. You can do nothing because you are nothing. You can't get into my consciousness because I can't get outside of the divine consciousness. Like darkness, you have no cause, nor are you a cause. You're only a suppositional opposite of the Christ. You cannot, you have not, you shall not. There's nothing in me that responds to your suggestions, so shut your mouth and get out of here. I refuse to stand aghast at your nothingness. Well, so much for the 10% of handling animal magnetism. Now, how about the remaining 90%? Our leader tells us to keep our minds so filled with truth and love that the suggestions of animal magnetism can't get into our consciousness. And that's why living Christian Science is about 90% of handling animal magnetism. Jesus proved that living Christian Science is the best defense against animal magnetism. And how grateful we are that we have a way shore whose life was the one perfect example of living the science of the Christ and thereby handling animal magnetism. Jesus not only understood the science of being, He lived it. What Jesus knew, he lived. And this enabled him to do what he did. And what he did enabled him to say what he said. Mrs. Eddy writes, if the lives of Christian Scientists attest their fidelity to truth, I predict that in the 20th century, every Christian church in our land, and a few in far-off lands, will approximate the understanding of Christian Science sufficiently to heal the sick in his name. Now, Mrs. Eddy's prophecy includes a qualification. She says, if the lives of Christian Scientists attest their fidelity to truth, Mrs. Eddy might as well have said, if Christian Scientists handle animal magnetism. If we live of love, we are living a life unafraid. If we live a life unafraid, we are living a life serene. Such a serenity is living a life imbued with the Christ truth. If we maintain a Christ-like consciousness, we can say to animal magnetism, you'll find nothing in me. But why if? What is there to prevent our living Christian Science and thereby handling animal magnetism? After all, darkness does not prevent the light. The light prevents darkness. Animal magnetism doesn't prevent your living Christian Science. Living Christian Science precludes animal magnetism. It's never a question of what animal magnetism can do to pull you or our church down, but what the Christ does to lift it up. So why if? You have what it takes. You have the Christ. Christ within you, the hope of glory. Our leader tells us to live so as to keep human consciousness in constant relation with the divine, the spiritual, and the eternal is to individualize infinite power. And this is Christian Science. Thank you very much.